Bill Bauer developed his love of poetry when his mother read nursery rhymes to him. Many years later, while studying to become a professor, he was drafted out of graduate school to train as an assassin in Vietnam. This changed the trajectory of his life forever, but his poetry remains.
One of the things that I appreciate about poetry is that by distilling your thoughts into a small place, it's kind of like a small explosive. A small round can do so much damage. If a poem is built right, then when it comes down to pulling the trigger, it can have a lot of power.
Listen to the poetry of Bill Bauer and H.C. Palmer, who served as a surgeon in Vietnam, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. A Call to Words, Veterans and Why They Write, was presented both at Park University and Johnson County Community College as part of their veterans programming, sponsored by Bookmark Press, The Writer's Place, and ResVets, an organization for veterans at the Church of the Resurrection in Kansas City. I'm Stephanie Hughes, and here's New Letters on the Air host, Angela Elam, to talk with Bill Bauer about his book, Last Lambs, New and Selected Poems of Vietnam, a 2014 legacy finalist for the Eric Hoffer Award.
Obviously, there's so much power and emotion, and the range of experiences that it covers are very intense. Bill, why don't you start us out with one of your poems? I think you were interested in reading Were They There When?
Right. It occurs to me that we don't learn from these wars. We just keep on having wars, and then we look back and say, well, why did we do that? Well, I don't know why, but it seems like they're television wars, like football games. It's a way of sitting back. And so I'll just read this poem. There's a African-American spiritual song, Were You There When? It has a refrain at the end that sometimes it causes me to tremble, tremble, tremble. And that's where this poem comes from. Were they there when their sons and daughters lost their arms and legs and faces, their youth and joy and lives? At Khe Sanh, I Drang, Fallujah, Kandahar, those flag wavers who know all about battlefields and heroism, second stringers who served but never threw in for ambush patrol, those never in combat who love to tell war stories and march in parades, the shysters of 4th of July and Memorial Day sales, politicians of sad excuses and devious deferments, kings, aristocrats, and generals who rally their troops from behind the lines, promise booty, glory, and a gravestone at Arlington Cemetery. Were they there when all hell broke loose, the recliner brigadiers of the television wars? Or did they sit back, prop up their feet, raise their glasses in air-conditioned homes, watch smart bombs on virtual screens, penetrate windows and bunkers with pinpoint accuracy thousands of miles away? Were they on foreign soil when they cheered the children of the Revolutionary War to fight false fights, to save the sorry ass of the greatest country in the whole world? Sometimes it causes an old soldier to rage, rage, rage.
That's the poem, Were They There When, from the book Last Lambs, New and Selected Poems of Vietnam by Bill Bauer. And I'm here tonight with him and H.C. Palmer at the Johnson County Community College. And we are celebrating, if you can put that word with the Book of War, the re-release of this book, Last Lambs. Bill, can you talk about coming back to this book again after initially putting it out and what that's meant for you?
The first Vietnam War poems that I wrote were published in a book called The Eye of the Ghost.
From Bookmark Press.
Bookmark Press in 1985. I was determined that those were the last poems that I was going to write about the war, because one of the things that I did not want is for the war to dominate my life, to define who I am. I'm not ashamed to be a Vietnam War veteran, but I'm more than that. And yet I found that the more I lived and the more that I read about the war, and the Johnson tapes came out and McNamara's book, basically admitting that the war could not be won. They knew that as early as 1966, and yet they pursued it. I read of what Richard Nixon did before the 68 convention, before that election, before he contacted the North Vietnamese and told them not to follow through with an agreement to end the war, that they would get a better deal after the election. As time went by, I started to think of more poems and more poems. And there are some that aren't in this book. I don't know what'll ever happen to those, but they're not finished yet. Last Lambs came out in 1997, and then there are about 17 or so new poems in this book. And then I took some time to write an introduction about what I had found out about the war to go with the book, perhaps to enhance the poem somewhat by that. You know, in a grandiose way, maybe let other people know what the war was really like and what we did and didn't do. So it's still going on in my head. So that's where the poems have come from. It's been said, and it is true sometimes, that writing this type of poetry is cathartic. It has not been so for me. In fact, I have seen a couple of psychiatrists at VA about PTSD symptoms, and their advice is, don't write any more poems. You just get madder and madder as you do it. Well, I think for me, my anger is like a fellow soldier. It has my back, keeps me safe.
You say that writing for you is not cathartic, and yet if you didn't let your anger and frustration, just all these different emotions out through your writing, if it's not cathartic, what is it?
It's for the record. That's why I write these poems. I have a concern about generational forgetting. A lot of, I think, young people today, for example, don't realize that if we had not won in Europe and in the Pacific in World War II and blocked the Soviets on the Eastern Front, the world they live in today would be totally different. You know, here we had the Vietnam War and everyone said, well, never again. Well, time goes on, people forget, involved in their lives. So in my own small way, I'm here to remind them about that. You know, look, this was a phony war. It was a stupid war. We've had some more of those, I think, since then. And I don't know if I feel better because I wrote the poems. I get angrier as time goes on, in fact. So, you know, if catharsis means that you can express yourself without blowing up a building or something, well, maybe that's true. I'm not going to do that. I had a soldier once that was dying. He said, you know, don't forget me. You know, that's why I'm writing these poems, in memory. There were three words that I saw at the Pearl Harbor Museum: remember, understand, honor. And that's what I want to do in these poems, all three of those things. And the understanding part is the part that I probably place more emphasis on than anything, but I don't want to be in a victim position and make that my whole life. But I want to make sure that in my own little way, that I can at least make that memory part of history. So that's really why I write the poems.
To make record of it.
Yeah, for the record.
Bill, I know that you have a very short poem in here called Assassin. I might get you to read that and talk about how long you were in the war in Vietnam and your experiences there.
Okay. For whatever reason, when I got to Vietnam, I was in Cu Chi, which is the headquarters of the 25th Division, and I was chosen with a group of other recent arrivals for assassination training. I thought for a while, well, what is it in my psychological profile that they found there? But everything was so screwed up over there, I think it was just you, and you type of thing. But anyway, you know, there's the old story about counting sheep to go to sleep. Until recently, the way I fell asleep a lot of nights is to plot assassinations. And I think about, well, how am I going to get into the village? How am I going to get around to the village chief's hooch? How am I going to crawl in? And what am I going to use? It'd be a little snub-nosed 38, or maybe I could cut his throat. I mean, that's kind of what I think about. So anyway, this poem is called Assassin. They shouldn't have done that, tear him out of graduate school as recklessly as people rip a page from a public telephone book. They set his brain on automatic. Here is how you place the barrel of a 38 behind the ear of a village chief while he sleeps. Here is how you come from behind with a garrote. Lyndon Johnson died peacefully during a nap. McNamara wrote a book. The assassin was discharged into the rest of his life.
Assassin, from the book Last Lambs, New and Selected Poems of Vietnam by Bill Bauer. And H.C. Palmer saw it from a different vantage point because he was a doctor. And I was saying, oh, like MASH? He said, no, he was the only doctor with a battalion of about 1,200 men, and there were no nurses, no women. So you want to talk a little bit about your experience?
Sure. I had finished medical school, and I was in my residency at the University of Kansas when I was drafted out of my residency along with 1,500 other doctors, actually in April, 5 months before the Gulf of Tonkin incident that supposedly triggered off the government to start the war. I think 15 doctors would supply about 30 divisions. I went to basic training, then to Fort Riley for a year, and then we got on a train and went to Oakland, got on a ship and went to Vung Tau, Vietnam, which is a resort. And then we started the war, and I was a battalion surgeon. I had a medical battalion, about a dozen medics that were out with the rifle companies. And my job was to stay in the aid station, and as they brought wounded in, start IVs, put on tourniquets, finish amputations if that was part of the deal. And then at a certain point, we bagged the bodies and called helicopters. We called them dust-offs. They were the medevacs, and get the wounded out, and if we could, we'd throw some bodies on as well. So I was in Vietnam for a total of 11 months because my trip on the troop ship took a month to get over, and that counted as part of my time.
Yeah.
But I was back home in one day, actually, and asked by a lieutenant in San Francisco when I was checking out if I was going out to eat, if I was going to leave the base to eat, and I said yes, and he said, well, don't wear your uniform. Be sure to wear civvies or prepare to get in a fight or have somebody spit on you. This would have been an American spitting on me. My time there was traumatic in ways, but being a physician when I went over probably was able to handle it better because I'd seen a lot of trauma. And I'd have to say, although I'm against the war, I'm glad I went. It changed my life, made me look at things differently, and gave me a lot of stuff to write fiction and poetry about.
Yeah, it's with you forever. I mean, just as Bill said. Well, let me have you read Selected Notes on Beauty, the series that was published in New Letters magazine. And after that, you were nominated for one of the best new poets of 2012. And I know it was also nominated for a Pushcart Prize.
This poem took me a long time to write it, probably 10 years. The conceit of the poem is that these are notes I've taken from my life, from a journal or from medical notes. And I didn't know how to put together, but one day a major in the Guard, who was just back from Korngal and had been down to Brooke Army Medical Center, and was to go back into the Guard. I noticed that half of one foot was missing. I asked him about it, and I said, how can you stay in with one foot like this? And he said, well, I'm a peacetime soldier. They're just going to use me over here. And that next week in church, our minister read a scripture from Isaiah, which is at the end. And when I got those two things in 1 week, the poem fell together. So these are Selected Notes on Beauty. They're a collection of notes starting with a visit of this patient to see me and ends with the visit of the patient to see me and then starts with childhood and then back up to Vietnam. It's called Selected Notes on Beauty. And then two epigraphs, one from B.H. Fairchild. And she says, what are you thinking? And I say, beauty. And then from the other great poet, James Wright, I did not come here to grieve for my people's defeat. First note, December 14th, 2010, VA Hospital, Kansas City, Missouri. Back from his tour in Afghanistan, the soldier says, "Half my foot is gone, Doc, but I'm still in the guard, a peacetime soldier now." I take his foot, a stub grafted at the arch, trace the spongy edges with my fingers. "No feeling," he says. "Beautiful work, don't you think?" The next note's back in 1942, June the 7th, the eastern slope of the Flint Hills in Kansas. 1 hour past dawn. My father steers our black 36 Pontiac across a bridge over Buckeye Creek, where he stops at the kill. "The doe will leave only her bones," he says. I believe this is good, but worry what I would leave if turkey vultures fed on me. Buttons? My St. Christopher medal? We drive from the smell of it, beyond the creek bottom and big cottonwoods, to the top of an incline in a tall grass prairie, where I consider for the first time what makes something beautiful. Hills emerging from deep shadows, sun-brightened tops, treeless and leveled as if worked by my father's carpenter's plane. Early summer blue stem rustling at my knees, and a sky so big I sense the loneliness, like a presence at the creation. "It's beautiful," I say. And he says, "Yes, more beauty than we can take in." The next note's August 23rd, 1965, Phuc Vinh, Vietnam. I'm astonished by a lucid conversation with an infantryman cradling a bullet inside his brain. "I'm going home to Montana, Doc, the Madison River Valley." He tells of a 24-inch rainbow that holds downstream from Varney Bridge, tucked under an overhang inside the mouth of Blaine Spring Creek. Describes the fish's transcendent colors as we load him into a dust-off for Tonsonute Hospital. "You don't know what you're missing, Doc. It's the most beautiful place in the world." The next note, February 8th, 1966, Benoit, Vietnam. Near the airbase, wreckage of a Chinook carrying drums of jet fuel cracks apart like a spent fire log. Its great rotors spear the earth. One of the crew props against burned-out cargo like a boxer, dukes up and ready to strike. When we go to him, he is smiling, the beautiful, full-toothed grin of incomplete incineration. Ears, nose, and lips burned away, eye sockets empty. Sunlight flashes through the breaks in the smoke, sparkling his dog tags like a secret code. I dig at the char with my fingers, pry a tag's crusted edges to read. Landfair, Alec B., U.S. 476455-72, O positive, Protestant. I break his bead chain, take the tag, and thread it between my own. September 3rd, 1993, on Varney Bridge in Montana. In town, news my soldier died at an army hospital in the Philippines. A waitress at the Ennis Cafe introduces me to his cousin, who stands with me now. He remembers that rainbow and was with my soldier when he caught the fish on a size 18 pale morning dun. He eases a metal box from his vest pocket, snaps it open. Replicas of mayflies, columns hooked across white foam liners. "These are his PMDs," he says. "Real mayflies are ephemeral, but these beauties will last forever." He closes the box, then opens it again. "On second thought, Doc, take one." Then September 12, 1996, at the Vietnam Memorial, Washington, D.C. I place Landfair's dog tag on the pedestal below the panel inscribed with his name. His tag slides easily under my finger, the granite's blackness as soft as skin. The stone reflects a kind of terrible beauty, a clear message and no smiles. Oh, I want to say I had nothing to do with it. I was not here. I was not born. And then back to the VA, December 14th, 2010, continued. He tells me his boot was blown off by an RPG. They were isolated 5 days in a valley called Korangal. No LZ for a medevac. So the medic dressed his wound, then commandeered a boot from a body bag, searching 4 bags for one that fit. That boot smelled of rotten flesh, Doc, but it was a gift from heaven. That and a little morphine let me stand and fight. I take his good foot, compare side to side, before and after, recalling a scripture. Perhaps these feet. He asked, "What do you mean?" And I say, "Isaiah." It was Isaiah who said, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of the messenger who announces peace."
Very nicely done. That's Selected Notes on Beauty by H.C. Palmer, and it was published in New Letters Magazine, Volume 77, Numbers 3 and 4. I mentioned it earlier, but you can really see it at play in Selected Notes on Beauty. You jump around in time, H.C., in your poetry. You said you had these different fragments and you were trying to know what to do with it, but I've noticed in some of the other poems that I've read by you, even within one poem, you let yourself go in one memory and then back and to the present moment and then back into a memory again. When you're shaping the poem, are you conscious of playing with time that way, or is it you're just following the way your brain takes you?
Well, I think my wife would say that my brain works kind of that way. Even doing the dishes and talking on the phone. No, I think that my mind is always going crazy like that. I guess I search for memories. It's been wonderful for me to go back to places like the Flint Hills and back to Montana. I don't know that I could say I found healing in those places, but I'd say that I found some ways to negotiate some brokenness from some of the memories I had in Vietnam. But the wall plays a very, very important part for me as well. Comparing to the new veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan and the Gulf War, although we had a lot of problems as Vietnam vets coming back, one point in, I believe it was 1981, we got the wall. And the wall to me has been a place that keeps coming back in my poems. Because there's so much going on. I don't know if you read Yusef Komunyakaa's poem, Facing It, but the poem just blew me away. There's one place in there, he's looking in the wall, I'm in the wall, I'm out of the wall. At the end he says, "Oh look, a woman is trying to erase her husband's name." And then he turns to look at the woman and he says, "No, she's brushing her boy's hair." I think that represents most Vietnam vets that have been to the wall, and I go back fairly regularly, and I have a friend that I write vicariously about because he was in a lot more shit than I was over there, and he and I shared it and held each other and cried. But the wall has been a place to negotiate brokenness because the wall is really a community. You see the people in the wall. You see your friends in the wall. Behind the wall is a berm. Supposedly they're all in there, in that dirt behind there. So those places all bounce around in my mind, even the good parts, you know, the good and the bad, it just mixes together.
Right. H.C. is getting together a writing group for veterans at the Writer's Place. And you don't have to be a veteran because a lot of people are affected by war, not just the people who fight it, but the people who are left behind, people who lose people. It's open in general. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I think anybody that's affected by war with their families or friends or even people that just want to know about war, the more people you bring into it and they get to hear these stories, we get a better understanding. And we hope that things like that will promote healing or some kind of way to negotiate the problems. I think Bill does this, although he doesn't admit it. I think when you write your story, and even if you're pissed off as hell when you're writing it, you write it, you get a hold of it, then it's yours and you own it. And he owns his poems, obviously. And I think as a physician, I might say I give you the diagnosis of write a heck of a lot more poems because I think you're doing great with it.
There's
you're the doctor.
That's a prescription, not a diagnosis. Yeah.
Well, I did not realize that Kansas City has a Vietnam War memorial. It's moving too. And Bill, you've got a couple of poems that have to do with that. Maybe we should get you to read this.
Sure. When the wall in Kansas City was first erected, it was vandalized. At that time, if you drove by there, 43rd and Broadway, the vets, they set up pup tents and they started guarding the memorial. They were there for quite a while to protect it. It was very unnerving in a way for me to see them there. They had not separated out from the war itself. They were still dressed in uniform and in the war. A lot of them were. So I was asked to read a poem for the dedication, and I think it was sponsored by Vietnam Veterans Against the War. The vandalism had a lot to do with people who were criticizing Vietnam War soldiers, not realizing that we didn't have a choice, and not realizing, too, that the soldiers who volunteered were lied to. They thought the whole thing was we're fighting communism, right? And we weren't. We were on the wrong side of the fence. We were fighting a neo-colonial uprising against the French, who had exploited the Vietnamese for decades. We were fighting for the Michelin Rubber Company, and we were fighting for the collaborators with the French. We were fighting for all the wrong reasons. So this is the poem I wrote for that event. And with it, I distributed a photograph of a temple guardian, the kind you would see outside of a Buddhist temple, for everyone to hold while I was doing this. It's called Warning. To vandals of the Kansas City Vietnam War Memorial, don't mock this wall. Don't say these soldiers didn't fight a real war. While you watched playoff games, they crouched in the mud and missed their women. They are of the 60,000 robbed of their youth by men in press conferences. Don't mock this wall. Don't say these soldiers wanted to make war. They only wanted to live out their dreams. They just wanted to be like you. Slide your fingers over their names and tell me you can't hear the echo of their voices chanting, peace, peace. Let this wall be. It belongs to them. They paid for it.
Bill Bauer, reading from his 2013 edition of Last Lambs, New and Selected Poems of Vietnam. Look for a special offer of this book and the double issue of New Letters magazine called Connected that includes H.C. Palmer's poem Selected Notes on Beauty. Go to www.newletters.org and click on Shop. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters magazine, published by the University of Missouri, Kansas City, with partial financial support from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Today's show was produced with Angela Elam, Zach Falcon, and Jamie Walsh. A special thanks to both Park University's Warrior Center and Johnson County Community College's Veterans Services, where we recorded A Call to Words, Veterans and Why They Write. I'm Stephanie Hughes for New Letters on the Air.